opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Do you recognize the song?
Hey, this guy's legit.
He's got it. How's it going, Northern California? This is Nigel and James.
James, how you doing?
It's been 3 weeks.
I know.
Out of practice.
I'm going to be stumbling all over my tongue here. There's been a lot going on.
Well, we missed the last two shows because Carl was streaming live from the debates, first District 1, then District 5.
Yeah.
So we got the evenings off.
That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
How do you love this weather we've been having for quite a spell?
Well, it's an English summer, so
this
it's good.
That's right. You would know that.
You know.
Your roots back in the wetlands.
In England, we call this beach weather. So
yeah.
Life is good.
Good.
And,
I love your new shirt.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it's a little test run, Bigfoot Originals.
Yeah.
It'll be another Bigfoot shirt.
Yeah. I love it.
I'm heading out to Humboldt tomorrow. Scouting for the...
Location?
The location for the Camping with Bigfoot. It's the guided expedition into Humboldt.
Yeah.
So
for those that have not heard us repeat it over and over again, if you go to the website, californiaadventuredistrict.com, and you are a Bigfoot lover, you can go sign up. If there's even space available left for Camping with Bigfoot. And
yeah, we'll see. We had about 80
inquiries.
Close to 90 inquiries for 15 spots, so we'll see what happens.
Wow. Right.
There was a movie done a couple of years ago, filmed up there in Trinity County right there, huh?
Yeah. Well, there's been a few. And the last official Bigfoot experience was January. This January in Humboldt, there was actually a family of four that were hiking in the redwoods, and they all just hightailed it, did a 180 and hightailed out of the forest, and said they were never coming back. So, Emma, you already started talking. Our guest today is Mr. John Green, and
dive right in,
running for sheriff of our beloved Shasta County.
Yeah, good evening. Thank you for having me on your program.
Yep, absolutely. So I heard you said that your wife said, "Are you nuts?" And I think other people are asking some of these other candidates that are running, especially in this particular season, like, why?
Yeah. She had her concerns over my mental health, well-being, when I decided to run again. But it was something that I felt down deep inside that I needed to do.
Yep.
And truly, you know, I talked with you a little bit before we went on air just because it's better acquainted. I mean, the last time you ran, you were very successful.
It was a successful campaign going up against a 12-year incumbent that hadn't been challenged. And me being the rookie in the political world, not a politician type thing, and just made a grassroots effort and talked to people on their level, talked from the heart, and went over some ideas and plans that I had that I thought could make Shasta County and the sheriff's office better serve the people.
So with that said, why I brought that up is just because of the fact that it's kind of one of those things when you're potentially that close, right? You think, what if? And maybe it's the next time.
I really didn't think that at the time.
Mm.
After the election, it was just such a brutal time, and exhausting over the 4 months that I campaigned last time. And so I just, kind of licked my wounds and looked back at the campaign and some of the missteps I may have made at the time, and went on from there. And, I figured that Shasta County was going to be having a sheriff that was elected at that time for 4 years after that. And then lo and behold, a year later, the sheriff at the time bailed out. He retired. So
for those who don't know, so let's back up a little bit. So one of the things that we talk about obviously is the tourism piece for Shasta County in our region.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of people leave Shasta County over the last couple of years, right, because of some of the things that are going on. But we've also seen equal amounts or more people moving in. So we have a lot of newbies to Redding. And so for those who... we have a lot of newbies. And James is actually a pretty good measure for that because his story is, he has people coming into the store all the time who've recently just moved here, right?
Yeah.
So we know that... much of our audience is new to Reading. So for those who are new to Reading,
Welcome.
Welcome. So why don't you tell us, are you actually from here? Or
you know,
were you
born? I've been here for 40 years, mm-hmm. since I was 15 years old. My family moved up. We had some relatives that moved up several years prior, and we visited during the summers and school breaks, came up and really enjoyed the area. And
from where?
That seems like a common theme, people coming from
Southern California. It was a little town. Well, we were from all over down there, Ventura. And then a small town out towards Palm Springs in the desert named Banning, mm-hmm. California. And
wow.
So my dad was a school counselor at the time, and he was looking for a safer place because we were kind of suburb inner city down there and looking for a safer place to raise the family. And he ended up landing a job in Red Bluff, and so we moved into Happy Valley back in, I think it was about 81. It was the summer between my junior or sophomore and junior year in high school. And so I went to West Valley High School and was a second graduating class from there. And,
that's cool.
Yeah. And then, couldn't wait to get back to SoCal, so I went to college right out of high school at UC Santa Barbara. And I was a little young. I was 17 as a senior. I was a young senior and wasn't quite mature enough. So I did a year there, got some units, and then kind of hightailed it back here. And
where did you live in Santa Barbara?
I was in the dorms on campus, yeah.
I grew up in married student housing in Goleta.
Oh, okay, yeah.
My parents were college people, and mm-hmm. that's where I ran.
Very big college town, yeah. And I spent many afternoons and evenings in Isla Vista and, mm-hmm. and the Goleta area.
Great place. So then, you know, I was there for 3 years, so I have to ask. So you went to university there. Do you remember being in your university there?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
Very, well, a lot of people in Isla Vista don't remember what happened yesterday.
No, I was young, but I was all about moderation, I wasn't focused. I guess I was more focused on the beach life and surfing and all that stuff.
So where'd you go after that?
I came back here and went to Shasta College and for a little bit there, and then started working in the electrician industry, believe it or not. And I was an electrician for about almost 3.5-4 years, and met my wife through some mutual friends. She had gone to Anderson High School. I went to West Valley. And so we met in right around 1987 and been together ever since. So we've been married 33, almost 34 years coming up in October.
Congratulations.
So thank you.
That's so cool. Something's working.
Yeah. You know, like anything, it has its trials and tribulations, but you stick through it. I have three adult children, mm-hmm. and that all went through the Anderson school system down there. And five grandchildren now, ranging from age from 6 down to one, just over 1 year old. So, yeah, wow. busy time.
So, when did you decide to get into the law enforcement?
It was shortly thereafter. My wife had a relative, an uncle of hers, that was in law enforcement, and I talked to him at great length. And he'd worked for both the sheriff's office and Reading Police Department, and so I talked to him quite a bit about the job, and I always gravitated towards law and law enforcement in my younger years. And so I made the decision to put myself through the Butte College Academy. And shortly after we were married, I did that and graduated from Butte College and got a job with Shasta County Sheriff's Office and spent 27.69 years there. not that I was counting, but yeah.
How was the first couple months there?
First couple months, it was an eye opener. It was completely different from the academy, because back in the day, you used to when you were hired on as a deputy sheriff, and I already had the academy, so I was a full blown peace officer. But you started in the jail, and that's where you worked your way out of. So yeah, my first few months was a real eye opener as far as getting thrown into the custody world, and I was able to gain a real appreciation for the work that the women and men do in that facility and in any custody type environment. And it was I spent 5.5 years there.
Would you say we have to take our first break?
Sure.
Would you say that is do you believe that's an important process to start in that area to give you some type of base or enlightenment before you're free to do all the other work?
Right. I believe that it was a very good stepping stone. Uh-huh. You learned how to communicate with people, with the bad guys. You mm-hmm. learn how to deal with them. You learn how to recognize when they're trying to pull something over on you, mm-hmm. You know, and and it was a very good. I think it was a little excessive, five and a half years, you know, but that's how it was back
then.
Oh,
really? Oh, so yeah. It wasn't short. So I was thinking it was like 5 months.
No. It was years.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got to take our first break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
And we're back.
We are. I just got my foot caught in my headphone cable.
Nigel and James, and we have John Green with us, who's running for sheriff.
Yeah, and when we left, you were 5 years into the jail.
Yes.
Yep, 5 years. way longer than I had thought. In my mind, I was thinking, like I said, 5 months, 6 months, right? And I'm like, oh, that's torture. And then you said, no, 5 years.
Yes, yeah. Whew. 5.5 years, and it was... I was told that it was going to be 3 to 5 years when I got hired, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I needed a job. I was fresh out of the academy. I was unaffiliated, and it was kind of a coincidence, too. The same day that I got the job offer from Shasta County, I got a job offer from Tehama County as well. So, I was a Shasta County resident for quite a number of years and just wanted to stay here.
Sure.
So instead of a commute down to Red Bluff.
Well, I would imagine. And I don't know for sure. I just say this, but I would imagine the pay scale is a little better.
You know,
or is it the same?
I can tell you. I remember standard. The exact pay that I my first salary was $11.34 an hour with the sheriff's office. Back then, minimum wage was around $3.35, $3.50. So it was considerable, and I think Tehama County was a couple dollars less an hour. But
nowadays, $3.50 buys you half a gallon of gas.
Yeah.
Barely.
Okay, so what'd you do after the jail?
Yeah, so after the jail, I worked my way out to patrol and went through a field training program, and I worked South County Patrol, which we were based out of right across from the TA truck stop.
Okay.
It was an old dilapidated house that they rented to the county for next to nothing, and that was our substation. So I worked out of there for probably 6 months or so, and then I was low man, so I got transferred up to the city of Shasta Lake, which was a fairly new contract city when they incorporated, I believe, in 94 somewhere around. Don't quote me on that, but I believe it was around then. So it was at the end of 96 that I got transferred up to the city of Shasta Lake, where I worked patrol for about 4 years, and then 3 to 4 years. And then after that, I was promoted into detectives at the time, and that was from about 2000 through 2003. I worked crimes against persons, property crimes. I was assigned actually as a City of Shasta Lake detective for a period of time, and then I was brought down to the main office where I was assigned to sexual assault investigation as well, along with some other investigations as well. And then from there, I went back out to patrol for a couple of years, and then I was interested in school resource officer, and that position came open, and my children were in high school and middle school.
They're, please, Dad, no.
Yes, I know, right? Yeah, probably. Yeah. So I was able to work out at West Valley, the high school I graduated from, which was very cool, as I got to see a lot of the first and second year teachers that started when I was there, and now they were administrators or long term teachers, and so a lot of good friendships were struck up, and I really enjoyed that. I had 8 schools that I served. Predominantly it was West Valley High School, and then I had all the Happy Valley schools, the Cottonwood schools, and Pacheco and Prairie. So it was, I was spread thin. You know, my main base was West Valley High School. So
you've been around the block.
Yes.
I was going to say that sounds like a good list of experiences.
And it goes on.
And it goes on.
Okay, yeah. Keep going. Sorry.
Just go briefly. No, from there, I went back to patrol after about 3.5 years as school resource officer and promoted to sergeant shortly thereafter. And cut my sergeant teeth up in Burney. Actually, it was right prior to getting officially promoted. They put me up in Burney as an interim watch commander. So I worked the Burney area for a few months and then got promoted and went right back to the city of Shasta Lake as a patrol sergeant, ship supervisor, where I worked there for, I'm going to say, about another year and a half. And then I was promoted into the position of administrative sergeant in the office of the sheriff. And so from then, that was about 2013.
Hmm.
And so I got to see the inner workings of administration. And during that time, I was in charge of internal affairs investigations, department-wide, and training, setting up training, securing equipment, and things of that nature. It was kind of a jack of all trades. And, you know, you're kind of the Radar O'Reilly, if anybody remembers MASH, of the colonel's office.
Favorite character.
So, yeah. So I did that. And then I was getting long in the tooth and approaching the retirement age. And so I elected to go back out to patrol for my last year and spend it out there. And it was kind of nice. My son, oldest son, had graduated from Chico State in 2011. So he really was kicking around. He got a degree in kinesiology and physical therapy type thing. And he really couldn't find a job because he wanted to stay local. And so he hit me up one day, "Dad, I want to go to the academy." And I said, "Hey, I'll support you." You know, he gave me all the right reasons. We had a long conversation. And then I just said, hands off. He applied at the sheriff's office. So I took a back seat, and even when their background investigator called me about him, I said, "You know, I can't. I'm not going to say anything about this. You know, we don't want any appearance of nepotism or anything of that nature." So he ultimately got hired, and when I decided to retire 3 years later, he was working patrol. We worked opposite shifts and opposite divisions. I was Shasta Lake, he was South County Patrol, just so we didn't ever cross lines. But it was very cool. I got to work my last day of patrol with him for about 4 hours, so which was real special.
So from a patrol standpoint, it sounds to me like you've been all over the county.
Yes.
So any appreciation or not appreciation for the size of this county?
Oh, it's massive.
And,
you get some calls in certain places, and you know, if you don't have a lunch, you better stop and get something because you're going to be gone for half your shift.
That's amazing. It's probably a dumb question too, but any appreciation for the outdoors or for our county?
It's absolutely gorgeous. And the time in Burney I spent really opened my eyes to the type of nature and outdoors we have here, other than just local, you know, within 20 minutes of here. You go up there, it's a whole different world. You know, you got MacArthur and Fall River and Glenburn and all those outskirts, and just beautiful, beautiful.
So have you actually, do you participate in the outdoor activities at all? Do you have any outdoor recreation hobbies?
I do.
Hiking, hunting,
golfing, pretty much. But yes, I've hunted over the years, and not a big hunter, you know. But I get my license quite frequently, and have a hunting rifle, and you know, we fish and do things of that nature. You know, we travel a little bit in our RV, and you know, we go over to a neighboring county, over Plumas County, and during the summer, and you know, spend a week there, and rent a cabin and just have a really good family time, and we fish and golf and boat and all that. So
you sound like a real good, well-rounded, red-blood American.
Yeah, I try to be, yes, sir.
So when you went to internal affairs, how was – is that one of those positions where people start to look at you funny?
It was very much so. But I looked at it as – you know, the police of the police and the women and men that I worked with over the years. Yeah, initially they were like, they see your car pulling into the substation and they're like, uh-oh, everybody scrambles and hides and all that. But in very short order, they knew that I was there just to find the facts. You know, and if a case came across my desk, it was you know, tell the truth. Let's work through this. You know, if you made a mistake, you made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And they respected that for me. And I had also been trained quite a bit in internal affairs investigations, not only just from the schools that the county sent me to, but a lot of training that I received being on the I was a director of a local chapter of Peace Officers Research Association of California, which is PORAC, and I was responsible to represent, you know, some 40-some-odd agencies and 2,300 officers in our region, you know, and lobbying for legislature that protected peace officers and protected the citizens and lobbying against detrimental legislation that was coming through. So, you know, they knew I had a well-rounded grasp on internal affairs and how they're conducted, and there are a lot of rules you have to go by when you do that because of the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, which affords them certain rights during these investigations.
So, after all this time, I mean, have you dealt with or seen stuff that's really egregious internally?
You know, I wouldn't say egregious if you're talking to a national aspect. But yes, there have been a few that were not so pretty, and obviously I'm bound. I can't discuss details of anything.
You can't mention names and addresses.
Yeah, or
but you can show me pictures.
I recognize that one.
But yeah, there were several that were shocking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, over the years, yeah. So I did that for 3 years.
Well, if you're dealing with humans, ultimately, that's what's going to happen,
and
no matter what.
I would say I probably, just a educated guess, I handled probably 30 to 40 a year complaints and investigations, and some of them didn't go to a full investigation. Some of them were just complaints that were handled at that level as complaints, but they're documented as an internal affairs investigation.
And I'm just because I don't know the ins and outs, right? So, and I know what an internal affairs person does, mm-hmm. but are they just as simple as somebody calling in and complaining about an officer, or I mean, is it that, or is it truly? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how, you know, what would you potentially do that would cause an investigation? I mean, obviously, if you were just a darn right criminal as a peace officer,
right?
I get that, but I don't know. I could imagine that there's just some minor infractions that happen where you just have to go through the process of, you know, saying, okay, this is what is being accused
and
blah, 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 blah. And it's really nothing, but you just have to go through the exercise.
True, and a lot of them are minor policy violations that are brought to attention by either a watch commander, a supervisor, another a coworker, another deputy, or another officer that you have to look through, and then it's
truly internal. It is internal, and it stays internal.
A lot of the internal affairs investigations, or quite a few of them that I handled over the years, were officer involved shootings. Mm-hmm. So whenever there's an officer involved incident or critical incident, that triggers an internal affairs investigation
automatically
to make sure that they acted within policy and procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So. And that's completely separate from the criminal investigation. So part of the Peace Officer Bill of Rights is that when you order a person to talk to you, and as the internal affairs sergeant, I had the authority of the sheriff. Basically, I was the sheriff ordering you to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
That cannot be used punitively, criminally against you because your job's in jeopardy. And if you refuse an order or refuse to participate, you can be subject to termination.
Hmm.
So when they cooperate with that, you can't coerce them to cooperate. And the other side is that the criminal investigation that goes along with these incidents, if there was one, they can't cross. You know, I can take parts from the criminal investigation to use in the internals, but you can't go the other way. It's a one-way valve.
Did your time as a detective help you?
Oh, yes, yeah.
When you go into the internal affairs?
It did, because you're basically doing an investigation, you know, from start to finish.
I didn't know that I'd be any good at detective, but that's something I've always thought would be just a really cool job.
Well, you know, detective always has that romantic connotation with it.
Right, right.
I just like to be Snoopy.
Well,
I like to figure stuff out.
Oh, great. Okay, so this is the end of the first half, and when we come back, let's get into the meat of where we're at now.
You bet.
All right. So we'll be right back.
The Real Estate Minute brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher priced homes sell differently than medium priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price.
Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
I didn't do it. It's a good groove though.
Well, we could play this right because you're not the sheriff yet. So nobody's getting harmed.
So welcome back, Nigel and James. Good evening, Northern California. We have John Green on us. For some reason, he's running for sheriff.
Also, interesting times. That song was not my idea.
So. No. You press play, mate. So these are interesting times.
They are.
So you ran once before.
I did.
And how long ago was that? How many years ago?
Four years ago?
Yeah,
the last election cycle. Right. Or primary election cycle.
So did you decide right after that you were going to run again?
No. In fact, it took me quite a while. People would ask me over the following couple of years, you know, hey, are you going to run again? You were so close. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like a 75-25, you know, four doing it, you know, then things just started happening that I didn't agree with and that I believe in my heart needed change and needed proper leadership. And so, ultimately it came down. I made the decision last July when they appointed yet a third sheriff to this county, you know, to an elected position.
It's that word appointed, right?
That's appointed, yes, which I believe shouldn't be synonymous with an elected official, but it happens. In fact, it's kind of a unique situation this year. All four county seats right now that are up for election, the countywide seats, each one of these incumbents or appointed incumbents were appointed for their first term, for the first delve into public office. So, and some of them haven't ran against anybody, and others have had one run under their belt over the last 16 years. So, that was one of the determining factors in my first run was that nobody had challenged Sheriff Busenko since he took office in 2006 and ran a hotly contested campaign against Brad McDonald and won. And nobody had challenged him since. He was a 12-year unopposed incumbent. And I was towards the tail end of my career, and I saw the way the department was heading. And I tried to formulate some ideas and brainstorm and come up with some solutions to what I saw coming down the road, and it fell on deaf ears. So I made the decision to retire a little bit early. I was of retirement age, which a peace officer in the state of California is 50. I'd been on 27 years, and I could have gone another 3 to max my retirement, but I wasn't about that. I decided at that time I'm going to run for sheriff, and I'm going to retire and do it that way. It would have been very difficult to run a campaign if I'm still working at the office, you know, because then you get into insubordination and things of that nature, which can come back and bite you internally. So,
and it seems like you could have to go into internal affairs on yourself.
Exactly, right?
So the last 2 years, ever since COVID happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
For better or for worse, I think a lot of people woke up.
I think so.
A lot of people woke up. All over the country. Well, all over the world, but all over the country and also in this county, right? So as we're seeing in this particular cycle, there's a lot more people engaged, right? A lot more residents are engaged in the process, and they've woken up. And over the last 2 years, specifically with all these restrictions and lockdowns and blah, 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 all of a sudden the importance of a sheriff – or a good sheriff came to the forefront, where it was up to the sheriff. People woke up to it's up to the sheriffs to either enforce or not enforce
mandates,
the mandates, the lockdowns, and all that kind of stuff. So, how do you feel? How did you feel when all that stuff started coming down the pike for our community.
You know, I was of the opinion that it was excessive governmental overreach after a certain period of time, you know, after the 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
The first 900 days of the 2 weeks.
Right. So I was very.
There's a song in that.
You know, I wasn't anti-mask. I wasn't anti-vax. I'm still not. But I am pro people making their own medical decisions and things of that nature. So mm-hmm. if I didn't want to go into a business or patronize a business that had a mask mandate, I didn't go in there. You know, if I wanted to go in, I put a mask on and accepted the company's request. Mm-hmm, right. Request, so, yeah. But yeah, I think it brought a lot of eyes open to governmental overreach and actually what the government is doing. And as far as, you know, going, making these backdoor decisions and deals and all in the guise of public safety, you know, and you made a really good point. A lot of people don't recognize the power of the sheriff and the great burden that a sheriff, a true constitutional sheriff has. He's the first and last line of defense between the citizens and the government. You know?
And I learned that not so long ago. I mean, it's been a while, but I was really kind of blown away at the position of sheriff mm-hmm. and what that really yeah. entails in your community.
Right.
Like, you know, that's the cherry on top.
Yes, it is. And you know, as far as I've learned a lot recently and I'd learned a lot over my career as far as, you know, the power that the sheriff does have. And I didn't really see it exercised too many times. Not that it wasn't needed or was needed at the time, but you know, I was a patrolman and a deputy, and then as I advanced in my career, I got the gist of what it meant to be a sheriff and to take the Constitution to heart and protect the citizens and make sure that their God-given inalienable rights are secure.
So this may be a silly question at that point. At this point, do you see like a disconnect between you having to uphold the Constitution and then what California is bringing us?
In certain circumstances, yes. You know, I would like to think it hasn't really affected Shasta County and the local law enforcement leaders in large. You know, not individually, but in large have handled it appropriately. You know, rather, you know, I did like, and I'll give kudos where kudos are due, no matter what side of the ballot you're on. That you know, when Eric McGreeny was appointed sheriff, you know, I believe he did a good job at saying, hey, we're going to educate people. We'll give the information out that public health is giving us, but mm-hmm. we're not going to enforce a mandate. A mandate is not a law, and this is my opinion now. A mandate is not a law. It's not been codified. It hasn't been through the legislature, and so it is not state law. And a lot of people don't like that, but you know what? I speak from the heart, and I'll give you my true beliefs. I'm not going to kowtow to certain groups. I'll tell you what I believe in and why I believe in it. And if you like it, you like it. If you don't, hey, that's your right as an American not to. And I respect your right to differ as well.
So try to be civil.
Yes.
I mean, that just helps a lot in the whole scheme of things.
So tell us what you've learned in this process about election integrity and all that.
Yeah, you know, I learned a lot. I went into it, you know, blind and tried to keep my eyes open, but I was not prepared as much as I am now to deal with the dirty side of politics. And it reared its head, you know, personal attacks, family attacks, and the personal attacks weren't so much because I've led a clean life and done right, you know, with my family and things of that nature. But they try and exploit, you know, family issues and things of that nature, you know, and it's unfortunate that it has to come to that. It's nothing more than distraction is what it is. It's distraction from the issues. And
no, it's a distraction, but it's also, you've chosen at that point to create a distraction, damaging somebody else's
credibility, integrity,
life. Yes. And, you know, I mean, yeah. it's yeah. so unfortunate where we've come to.
It was that, you know, they attack family members. I have family members that have addiction issues and some mental health
family
issues.
Doesn't.
Right. And, you know, and so in the last campaign against Tom Pasinko, you know, they had a shill in the crowd. Hey, is your, you know, your so-and-so is done this and this and this. And I said, well, yeah,
okay,
they have. And I asked the crowd, hey, anybody in here by a show of hands that does not know personally a friend or a family member that has these issues?
Mm-hmm.
And these are some of the issues that, as sheriff, we need to address.
Right.
You know, and so it shut them down. Right.
Education,
then.
Mental health. I mean, just the whole gamut.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, there's
yep.
a lot of messed up people.
So ever since I've been here, I've been hearing this word jail.
Mm-hmm.
new jail. And it seems to rear its head every
election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely,
right?
It does.
Homeless and jail.
Yep.
So the vanilla question is, where do you stand on
right
jail?
Right.
What's the deal?
Obviously there? You know, the nickel answer to that is yes, we need more jail space. We've needed jail space since when I started in 1990. The jail
was jail full. Space when it was built it finished
we did.
Built
it, right. I started 5 years after it was built, and it was already full. There were people living in the property room on bunks stacked to the ceiling. So it's been an issue over the years. And part of my reasoning for running last time is because the county had turned down, the county in concert with the sheriff at the time had turned down, state grants based in the Assembly Bill 109, which transferred low level state inmates to county facilities, rather than in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so, thereby taking up our space for, you know, 1, 2, 3 years, when before it was county jail, you could only do a year. So they turned that down. They gave all these reasons why. Oh, well, once we build it, we can't staff it. We can't operate it. Well, you know, and the state will take it back and it'll look bad, this thing. But that was just smoke and mirrors at the time. They knew that once you build that facility and it's built, you only have to operate a certain percentage of it until you can get your staffing level and your operating budget up to that mm-hmm. up to that
the
that,
state
that
then
level.
Supports it.
The state supports
until that
it.
Time.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
and so you know it's you might have to run half of a facility, you know, for a couple of years, but you know it would have been and it would have been done and completed by now. You know they did add campaign promises last time. They did add you know, a few beds to the jail by modifying the kitchen and adding showers per Title 15, which is the government code that governs inmates. And so there was a little bit of alleviation, but, you know, once they were open, they're full. So, you know, and you're right, exactly right. Every campaign comes out, oh, I've got this grand plan. You know, here's this, you know, the current one that's coming out right now. Here's this wagon wheel, which is a, you know, an archaic design of a facility that, you know, there's been no property identified. There's been no hard line budget on what it's going to cost. There's no infrastructure. There's no plans drawn up. It's in my opinion, a campaign stunt. Hey, look what I'm doing, you know, and the current appointed sheriff has been trying to get build a life center for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, and there's been nothing to come to fruition with it. So what's to say it's going to happen now? And then even if we do build a facility of that nature, which we need to get started, that's going to be, you know, 7 years down the road before it's operational.
And a life center is what, like a training?
Well, I think that was his term.
Yeah.
It's going to be, a combination rehabilitation / custody facility, you know,
mm-hmm.
and for the people that want to go through the program and actually want to change their lives and get help and the resources
sure.
they need.
And that includes, I mean, obviously education, mental health. I mean,
yes.
A whole slew, I would imagine, of layers.
Yes, yes, very much so.
Because you can get all educated you want and get clean, but if you have mental issues,
right.
you're going to go right back out.
It's
going to come right back.
It all intertwines, and that's what I tell people, too. We need to have the services, but I am acutely aware of personal situations with family members that until you're ready to stop,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to stop. No
yeah.
matter how many programs you go through, no matter what's offered to you, it's going to take more than that. But, you know, I've identified several areas in the county that we can facilitate, and I don't want to say immediate, but within the first 2 years of my term, maybe a year and a half, is transforming the courtrooms 1 and 2 that are attached to the jail, that when they were built, the infrastructure's there to convert them into a housing unit. There's a huge administrative unit right in between the courtrooms 1 and 2 that can be converted into health and human services parts with mental health treatment, with medically assisted treatment for inmates that come in addicted to get them off of whatever they've been abusing the proper way. You know, the cold turkey doesn't seem to work, and offer mental health services as well through those. You know, the infrastructure's there. It's just going to take somebody, and it should have been done 4 years ago. It should have been done 8 years ago, and it wasn't. You know, and I think it's time to let somebody like me come in and do it. Let's just do it.
Well, on that note, it's also time to take our last break. Here we go. We'll be right back.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least three realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
You got that one?
Oh, yeah.
Good one. Well, James seems to be AWOL. So Jared hit on the point. Maybe we can sum this up very quickly. Like,
sure.
A very specific reason why you don't like the wagon wheel.
You know, it's not that I don't like it. It's conceptual at best right now. You know, the photograph that was put out in the news was taken off the internet show and tell type
right.
photo, you know, but no, the need is for a new facility. It's been here for a long time. The state money's there, and what I envision a new facility being, it would be a medium security facility with no less than 500 beds, where we could house people who are awaiting court and things of that nature, and utilize the maximum security. Of the current jail for sentenced inmates, so
the jail that we have, I've never mm-hmm. been through it.
Didn't you serve time there?
No, that was way up in the hard mountains that I did that. that facility is designed more for. I mean, it's more secure. I don't know what word you use.
It's a maximum security facility.
Oh, yes. It is. Okay.
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I had no idea.
Under that, yeah, it's you know, a medium security would be. For things, sentenced inmates that are work release that we used to have. We used to have the annex, which was a medium to minimum security mm-hmm. facility, and that went away years ago because of budget cuts, and they had Crystal Creek up near Whiskey Town that was state property at the time, but they ran a fire camp, and that was a minimum security.
That must have been. We used to have a big ranch up in Whitmore, right? And when we used to do, it was like every 4 years we were required to burn. We had like 2,000 acres or whatever, mm-hmm. and so we would do a burn to keep the down so that there was land management, so that when a big fire came through, it didn't get up into the trees. And I would be out there working and stuff, lighting fires and working with all the fire guys. I didn't realize, but all of them were inmates. So, I was just like,
yeah, probably
somebody finally told me, and I was like, what?
Probably either from the state prison system or mm-hmm. from Crystal Creek, because they did also house state inmates at Crystal Creek, minimum security.
So, yeah.
So you obviously have things that you're running on, but now mm-hmm. that you're out and about, do you hear mm-hmm. what do you hear from people in the community? Is it the same issues that you're running on, or do they have different concerns?
The same issues, and they are resonating from the last election too. You know, one of them being jail mm-hmm. space and pretty much an immediate solution to that, or as immediate as it can be. And another thing too that big people are talking about, and they always have, it's always an issue, is concealed carry in Shasta County. So, and you know, last time that I talked about campaign integrity, there was some submarine shots to me towards the end of the campaign that, oh, he's not CCW friendly, he's going to take your CCWs, and that anything couldn't be further from the truth. I'm pro Second Amendment, and you know, that's all I can say over that is I'm prepared to streamline the concealed weapons process, so you're not expired per the state, which I don't even like saying that, but it's state law. If you're, you know, you can't reapply until it's 30 days prior to your expiration, but once you hit enter and apply and pay all your fees, it's a 60-day wait for some reason. So that needs to be
revamped. So what happens for the 30 days that you're
exactly doing? Yeah. So the 60 days after you expire, you're not legal per California law to conceal carry, which is absolutely wrong.
So then at that point, so that would be a tricky question, right? So for you to uphold the Constitution, which in the Constitution you have a right to bear arms, right?
Absolutely.
So then that butts heads
with state law.
With state law.
Yes. Yeah. That's interesting. As a power of sheriff, it would be my duty to make sure that didn't happen. Hmm. So and streamline
isn't
that.
Shasta County one of the what's the word I look? I don't want to use the incorrect term, but we are fairly, I mean, we do a lot of conceal.
Yes, I believe it hovers around 10,000, 9 to 10,000 CCWs per year. Yeah.
And with that, statistically, not to derail us or whatever, but statistically, what kind of, I mean, you always hear, you know, all these gun control laws and things like that because people that, that there's bad people that are doing bad things and shootings and stuff like that. But how much of that really is coming from people that have gone through and got a permit?
I'm just going to take a semi-educated, uneducated guess of zero. You know, it seems all these shootings in
most of those people aren't concealed carry people.
Right.
Right.
So a lot of the inner city mass shootings, and you know, of course, you do have the instances where the high schoolers get a hold of their parents' weapons and things like that, and I believe that's on the parents to secure them from the children.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You know, that's a very big issue here. And the main thing that I want here, and one of the main reasons I'm running for sheriff, is because there needs to be accountability and transparency, period. That we saw through the last two appointees, the current appointee, it was just like out of a hat, all of a sudden, hey, the current appointee is taking another job in the county, and oh, hey, here's this guy, you know, he's the only one interested, which there was nobody knew that was coming. You know, and a deal of that nature, common sense would tell you that happened months prior. So there was some backdoor, and that's the cronyism that's occurring in this county. And to what really tugs at me is the level of offense that these people take to challenge their position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's. I'm exercising my right as an American to run for public office, which I am qualified for, and in my opinion, I am the most qualified. I have the most experience local here. I didn't bounce around from agency to agency, town to town, all over the state. I stuck it out here with Shasta County, the residents, got to know them, got to serve them, and did a very good job over my career. I'm uniquely qualified in that nature. You know, there's a difference between a police department and a sheriff's office. Yes, we both enforce the laws, but the sheriff's office has so many different facets to it that I have experience in.
Mm-hmm.
But for the good old boys to circle around and bring in their buddy and say, and then get so offended that somebody challenges them, you know, that's my right as an American to run for office. Mm-hmm. That's the right for anybody who's qualified for a special office, regardless of their education background, regardless of their work history. Some, you know, the sheriff's, the requirements for sheriff are very specific, which I exceed the qualifications for sheriff, no matter what some supervisors said in the past in the press that, you know, I'd lack the requisite requirements to become sheriff, which was totally false. But, it's just that, seeing these people just band together and you know, kind of liken themselves to a swamp of people that are so so ingrained and think they're entitled to hold these positions for as long as they want, and then when they decide to get out of it, they want to try and leave some form of a legacy that they think they are entitled to by selecting the next person. You know, so that's one of the main reasons I'm running as well.
Yeah.
You know, and
so you seem somewhat passionate about this.
I'm very passionate about this, and I think it shows. That's I think why I did so well the last campaign, because the people that I've met and talked to door to door, going community to community, I didn't waver. You know, I wasn't on one side of the fence as far as CCWs or being a constitutional sheriff. You know, I'm not the guy, oh, well, I didn't really know that's what it meant to be. But, yes, I'm that now, because they see the traction that somebody's getting, mm-hmm. because that's their true belief, and kind of weave in and out and be a chameleon and a snake trying to grab a little bit of every vote.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to vote for me, please don't. Vote your heart. You know, and that's what I stand for.
Real quick, I just was trying to think through the process. So you ran, how long ago was it?
4 years.
Okay. Yeah. So you ran and you did very well. It was just
less
than 1,000 or just slightly over 1,000 votes in difference, right? And then that person that actually took the seat a year in left. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So then there was an appointee.
There was an appointee who lasted about 16 months.
Yeah.
Somewhere
and then that appointee left?
That appointee was given a created position within the county.
Okay.
Very high ranking position in the county. And then they, with you know, a year and 4 months left till the election, or not even that, it was last August. So, you know, 10 months before the primary, you know, they usher in another one, appointee.
So that's interesting. I mean, no disrespect to anybody or the person that's in the seat now and stuff, but doesn't seem like that that the person that should take that would be the person that, I don't know. I mean, if you almost won the race, that would be the person you'd think you would go to.
That would be logical.
You go to the second place person.
Now you're talking logic.
Yeah.
And, I'm like thinking to myself,
and I did make that point to the board in October of 2019 when Sheriff Pacinko announced his retirement. I stood up there and said, hey, this is, you know, I ran. I said, if this other gentleman, the undersheriff, wanted to be sheriff during this term, he should have ran and let the people vet him like they vetted me. And then we wouldn't be in this situation now. And the same thing, you know, they have a completely competent undersheriff that could have held until if they were dead set on appointing, which they were, wait until the June primary, which was 10 months after the second or the first appointed sheriff left. You know, wait that 10 months, let the undersheriff run the ship, and then wait till the June primary. You know, winner take all. Mm-hmm. Whoever wins, yes, we'll appoint you for the remaining 6 months of the term, and then you start your elected term. You know, that would have been the logical way to go.
I want to have a question.
Yeah, go for it. I do too. Now I'm all of a sudden like, I have all these questions. Go ahead.
Well, because I know we only have like a minute or two left.
Yeah.
But this Sherry Papini thing.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Like, when that first started, did you know or have an inclination that something wasn't right?
You know, we all speculated, but I was a patrol sergeant at the time in Shasta Lake, and it happened off shift, so I wasn't on duty when the thing went down, but I was up working the opposite side of the shift rotation. And from the gate, the sheriff at the time put out a gag order to the detectives not to talk about anything.
That was true, yeah.
At all. I mean, there was
and
nothing.
They did
so
nothing.
Even insiders, I couldn't get any information, and not that I hounded for it, but, you know, you all wonder, like, hey,
well,
what's
going on here? We're not detectives, but I think all of us, most people in the community figured it out really quickly, felt that something was wrong.
It's that gut check.
I personally thought it was sad that it took the feds to come in and solve it. Personally, you know, that was a sheriff's office case.
Whole weird thing.
And that's a whole nother conversation. We could get into it another time. But, you know, I just wanted to reiterate about campaign integrity, you know, and what's occurring, so the public is aware of what's occurring. So there's special interest groups out there, nonpartisan, or some of them are partisan. They are putting these forums together under the guise of being impartial and fair. And when you do research, like I do, I research everything. Everybody who contacts me and wants to go through this, I look up who they are, you know, Facebook, Google, whatever. And I've found in several instances that these people are on campaign committees of other candidates. Mm-hmm. They have donated to their campaign cause. Yet they're trying to give this impression of being impartial by hosting these forums. The Shingletown Forum was a very good event. It always has been. They put on a town hall and they invite the candidates for the offices up there, and you show up. And in the last one, two of the candidates had put shills in the crowd. Right, I counted 16 people that I knew personally did not live in that community that were either employees of the sheriff's office or another entity that was running, and they're in there to ask ambush questions, and that detracts from the citizens actually learning the platforms and getting to meet the candidates.
It's manipulation.
Know. It is.
So last 30 seconds.
Yeah,
your gut check. Are you within the deputies and everything? What are you? Are they coming up and supporting you?
They are not. This time it was really weird. I didn't get afforded an opportunity to have a debate with the current sheriff. I don't know why. I know they were retaliated against for endorsing me last time over the preceding 2 years by both the sheriff and the first appointed sheriff, from what I hear, and this is just what people have told me. So there was a lot of disinformation put out during that time, and so basically when I went and I got the endorsement from the Deputy Sheriff's Association, there was over 100 or around